the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Good Wednesday morning, everyone. Taylor, Brian, and I are out at the Central Valley Almond Day at the Fresno Fairgrounds today. We'd love to meet you guys, so if you see us at the expo, feel free to stop on by and chat with us for a few minutes. And have you heard the buzz? This week is Pollinators Week, and it's time to shine some light on our favorite pollinators, including birds, butterflies, bees, bats, and beetles. The California Department of Food and Agriculture wants you to take time to learn about the benefits of pollinators and how to maintain pollinator health. In today's show, we will talk about trade, drones, and the Fresno Food Expo, as well as Farmers Market's EBT programs. But first, let's get an update on China tariffs and trade from AgNet West, Taylor Hillman.
The situation with China and trade relations has gotten a little tight with the U.S. officially enacting tariffs on the Asian country. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue avoided comments on trade with China, possibly the first time publicly he's ever done that. However, the questions were asked while he was at a puppy farmstead on a feel-good type trip.
Mr. Secretary, I think they know who you are.
They act like it's over.
Alrighty, thanks guys.
We had a quick comment on trade, sir.
We have time, sorry.
Purdue's aide declined the question, saying, "We don't have time, sorry." Meanwhile, the Farmers for Free Trade, who spoke in Lodi recently about their report on how tariffs would impact California industries, are going on the offensive. They released a television commercial this week in partnership with the U.S. Apple Association.
The U.S. apple industry does depend on exports.
But trade policy from Washington puts orchards like Mark's at risk.
And Farmers for Free Trade Executive Director Brian Keel made comments this week on how going back and forth on threats and talks may not be the best way to accomplish what the president's trying to do.
If China is the issue and intellectual property theft is a very real issue, let's address that. Let's do it in a coalition setting where we bring all the trading partners together who trade with China, get everyone singing off the same sheet of music, and apply maximum pressure on China.
Keel added that there is power in numbers, but we are being aggressive with our possible supporters at the same time.
We've unilaterally hit China, so they're unilaterally hitting us back. And then rather than building a coalition, we've started whacking all of our allies. So we're whacking Canada, we're whacking Mexico, we're whacking the EU.
I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
And now here's Brian German.
The Bureau of Reclamation recently issued updated allocations for the South of Delta Central Valley Project contractors for the 2018 contract year. The updated allocations are based on continued refinement of hydrologic and operational analysis, along with evolving operational conditions. The allocation for South of Delta Agricultural Water Service contractors has now been increased from 45 to 50%. The updated allocations for contractors South of Delta remains at the greater of 75% of their historic use or public health and safety needs. To promote effective use of supplies and efficiency for next year's operations, the Bureau of Reclamation still plans to limit the overall amount of water in San Luis Reservoir that is rescheduled at the end of the contract year into the 2019 contract year. Discussions will continue with South of Delta contractors and others to refine end-of-year rescheduling concepts and implementation. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Amy Fuentes, manager of the Fresno Food Expo, shares how the expo has grown. What started in 2011 and reached only the communities around Fresno is now reaching the state, nation, and parts of the world. Amy Fuentes talks the changes to the 2018 Fresno Food Expo.
We are a super unique region. We literally grow and produce almost every type of food product here, definitely by far the largest in the nation. So that was really the goal, looking at what was our largest exporting industry and how do we capitalize on that, and then how do we bring them more customers. And as we got into it, we consistently have received interest from outside of the area, companies wanting to participate. I think a lot of that is attraction to, we are not one of those massive industry trade shows where you're one of 2,500 booths. It really is an intimate setting, a great opportunity to connect to new customers. And then as we move forward, we now have a board of directors. They said, we think we have something super special here. And California by far is the largest food producing state. When it comes to fresh, we absolutely dominate. We're over double the production of any other state. And then same thing in food processing and food manufacturing. And we are in the prime location, making it super easy, super convenient and accessible for companies to come in from around the state and participate in this 1-2 day show. And then the same thing with buyers. We just announced expanding running to all of California, welcoming food and beverage companies from all of California just last week. And already we've seen an uptick and companies from outside the area registering to exhibit.
There's a strain of Phytophthora that could cause big problems for strawberry growers in California if it ever gets moved to the state. Cal Poly's Dr. Kelly Ivers recently told Agnet West why Phytophthora is a little bit of a challenge for strawberry growers to manage.
Yeah, so it's a fungus-like organism, but it's not a true fungus. So most of the fungicides don't work against Phytophthora. And so there's only a few chemistries that really are very effective. And unfortunately, we only have two modes of action.
To potentially complicate it even more, Ivers said they're watching a strain in the southeast that could take one of those modes of action away.
So there's a species of Phytophthora called Phytophthora nicotiana, and they found it in Florida, and it does have some resistance to methanoxam, which is the main active ingredient. It's one of the only active ingredients we have that works against this disease.
I'm Taylor Hillman for Agnet West Radio Network.
This is Farm City News Day by Agnet West. We'll be right back.
This is Ryan Jacobson, Fresno County Farm Bureau CEO, and you're listening to Agnet West Radio Network.
Welcome back to Agnet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
The Ecology Center's Farmers Market EBT program allows those with CalFresh EBT benefits to purchase fresh produce sold at farmers markets throughout California. Food and Farming Program Director for the Ecology Center, Carly Brinkman, talked about how the program works.
A customer goes to a farmer's market and they go to a central point in the market, usually an info booth, and that's where they swipe their card. They decide ahead of time how much they want to spend. The market manager would swipe their card, the customer would enter their PIN, and then the customer would be issued EBT script. And that script could be spent on any eligible food item in the market, and it'd be sent directly with those farmers. And then later, the farmers would redeem it for cash. And so that's the model that we piloted. And since that time, we've been able to share our best practices and share tools and resources and provide technical assistance to farmers markets all over the state of California. And we've helped to bring on hundreds of farmers markets so that they can accept those benefits as well.
I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Intractable. That's how Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue described some of the issues keeping the U.S. and Canada from a NAFTA agreement. This after a day in Canada Friday visiting with Canada's Ag Minister Lawrence McAuley. In a phone hookup after the meetings, Perdue said he was still hoping for a new and improved NAFTA with Canada and Mexico.
We will continue to discuss NAFTA on into the summer and hopefully have some resolution there. We feel probably more optimistic in a Mexican agreement sooner than Canada. We still have some intractable issues with Canada that we are working through, but hopefully we can get an agreement with Mexico and then with Canada very soon this summer. We know that we're up against the Mexican elections here at the beginning of next month.
And U.S. midterm elections in November. However, Perdue said the U.S. elections really are not playing a part in trying to speed up the NAFTA negotiating process. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Well, in today's livestock news, the U.S. Meat Export Federation will hold its 2018 Latin American Product Showcase next week. Now in its eighth year, this highly successful event brings U.S. red meat exporters together with key buyers from throughout Central America, South America, and the Caribbean. Joe Sheely has the details.
The dates and location for this year's U.S. Meat Export Federation Latin American Product Showcase will be June 27th and 28th in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. Gerardo Rodriguez, Regional Marketing Director for Mexico, Central America, and the Dominican Republic, has more details in this USMEF report.
We are very excited to have this eighth edition of the Latin American Product Showcase taking place for the first time in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. There's people coming from all over Central America, South America, Caribbean, key buyers from more than 15 different countries. They're developing new channels. They're expanding their business. So they're looking for more and more products. In the case of the Dominican Republic, we will have people from the retail sector, from the processors, food service distributors, people from Punta Cana, Romana, Santo Domingo, Puerto Plata attending this event.
Elizabeth Wunderlich represents USMEF and the rest of the Caribbean region. She's excited to have a convenient location for the buyers she serves.
We're looking forward to kind of using it as a way to introduce buyers that have not met that many of the suppliers from the United States. And this gives them just a quick snapshot into all the different possibilities of product that they can buy in a two-day period. Caribbean buyers really need someone that's a good consolidator for them. They don't buy one cut. They buy maybe one box of a whole lot of cuts. So they lean toward a lot of our trader members because they have the ability to consolidate on one container, beef, pork, all different kinds of things. And there's a lot of portion control that comes into the Caribbean because they're looking for very high-end cuts, but they don't want to have to bring in all of these big pieces and cut it themselves. And we have a lot of portion control members that really take advantage of the Latin American Product Showcase.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And while traveling to Canada last week, Ag Secretary Senator Perdue and his Canadian counterpart spoke about supporting trade, and they did so in unison. Perdue visited the farm of Canada's Ag Minister Lawrence McCauley, and then speaking with reporters after the event, Perdue discussed Canada's dairy supply management system that is being targeted by the U.S. dairy industry as a priority to address through the North America Free Trade Agreement or NAFTA renegotiation. Perdue told reporters that it was not the U.S.'s place to tell Canada it could not have a supply management system. But he said Canada's system cannot result in oversupply of some products on the global market that depress prices. According to Reuters, McCauley said the two were not ready to signal what changes might be included in NAFTA or supply management because that's the job for the people at the table. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Yes, it's a fact that American farms are getting larger. Doesn't mean that they're all corporate-owned, though. The largest part of U.S. agriculture is still the family-owned farm. That's where most of the growth is. Family-owned farms are much more like the 2,000 acres, not the 200 to 300-acre farms of the past. Now, this is where the growth in agriculture really is. As recently as 2012, 36% of all agriculture was farms with 2,000 acres. Now, with all that in mind, what we call large farms are also getting bigger. And then there are the corporations that operate more than one farm. Some they own, some they rent or lease. But no matter the size or how many acres, the objective is the same. Produce more food. More food includes meat as well as vegetables. And that's AgReview for today. Everett Greiner, AgNet West.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
There's been a lot of attention paid to the honeybee population, which is evidently being decimated by a number of things. We've all heard about how important honeybees are to pollinating certain crops.
Things like squash, cranberries, blueberries, strawberries, almonds.
With a long list of crops, Dr. Dolores Savignano with the Fish and Wildlife Service. Her agency is more interested in helping other pollinators, the wild ones, and she was here on the Mall in Washington, D.C., telling folks, for example,
how to attract all sorts of pollinators to their yard and garden.
And she says there's actually quite a lot that homeowners can do. Of course, first we need to know what those wild bees, the bumblebees, hummingbirds, and others actually need.
Pollinators, like any other animal, need food. And so in this case, it would be nectar from flowers. They need homes. And so depending upon the type of pollinator, the home might be different. So a bee, most bees either nest in soil or in wood. Or a hummingbird would nest in a tree, so depending upon what type of pollinator, what home they would need. So they need some sort of habitat. And then you want to try to minimize the use of pesticides, because sometimes pesticides will harm things that you're not out to harm.
So for food for the pollinators, Savignano says, of course, flowers are great, but you need a variety.
And you want to plant flowers that are going to bloom throughout the whole season, because if you just have food for them in the spring, then they've got nothing to eat all summer or fall. And it's best if you clump flowers so that they don't have to fly so far between flowers to get to them. It saves energy. And you want flowers of different heights and different types, because some bees have long tongues and they can get into tubular flowers. Other bees have really short tongues and can't.
Also, if you want to go that extra mile, she says you can actually provide homes for some of these pollinators.
Most of our native bees nest in either wood or in the ground. So if you want to provide nesting sites for them, you can leave open patches of soil where they can easily dig into.
Oh, okay.
Or you can put out blocks of wood with pre-drilled holes, and they'll use those holes to put eggs in and provision the eggs with food, and then they'll plug it up. And when the egg hatches, it'll dig its way out. So you can provide homes.
Now back to the food for the pollinators. Dr. Savignano encourages using native plants and flowers native to your particular area.
And we've got a lot of information online at www.fws.gov/pollinators that would help you. There's even these nifty guides that our partners at the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign did, where you can plug your zip code in and get a specific list of native plants for your area.
That website again, the Fish and Wildlife site, so it's fws.gov/pollinators. That's fws.gov/pollinators. From the Mall in Washington, D.C., this is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Some of the worst garden pests to be on the watch for. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. There are many garden pests we need to keep a daily watch for. Among them, the pesky hornworm, or large green caterpillar known for feasting on tomato crops. Another pesky pest? Slugs. Try using eggshells to keep them out. Aphids love to chew on roses and other flowers. Applying a soapy insecticide is said to be very effective. Grasshoppers can also wreak havoc, especially after a rainfall. Chickens and guineas reportedly give good control by gobbling grasshoppers, but keep an eye on your poultry helpers to make sure they don't harm crops. Cucumber beetles could also be a serious garden pest, as they're responsible for transmitting a deadly bacteria that will wilt cucumbers and melons. Whiteflies are also a nuisance and have reportedly been on the rise. One of the best methods is to plant more flowers, plants, and herbs that will deter these critters from getting into your garden in the first place. I'm Kathy Eisen for AgNet West.
Good day, everybody. Albert J. Hernandez, the Untamed Chef for AgNet West. Welcome to the California Kitchen, where you can learn how to cook in under 3 minutes or less. I'm your host with the most. Let's get started. So I want to do something really interesting today. I know that our heirloom tomatoes are really in season right now, and they are just phenomenal. The flavor is so, so good. Now, one thing that I think doesn't get a lot of credit for is a great quality burger. Now, what really happens when we make a burger is we need to have great condiments. And don't get me wrong, I love ketchup and I love mustard, but sometimes we want to go a little bit more above and beyond and have something more of a gourmet experience. This is my recipe for a sweet tomato jam. Let's get started. The very first thing we're going to do is take 2 cups of heirloom tomatoes. Preferably, I like to have the little heirloom tomatoes, like the little grape tomatoes. The flavor is so much more prevalent, it's so much more juicy, but more importantly, it's just a very real flavor. And we need these tomatoes to let off the moisture that we need in order to actually make a caramelization happen. So 2 cups of heirloom tomatoes are going to go into a small sauce pot. Followed by that, I'm going to add 1/2 cup of yellow onion, preferably diced small, 1 clove of garlic, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 3/4 cup of sugar, salt and pepper to taste. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to add our oil to the pan. Next is going to add in my heirloom tomatoes. I'm going to let them mix around for approximately 5 to 7 minutes. Now this is very important, because if we don't mix them for enough time, the flavor that we're looking for is going to be completely lost. And we're trying to, realistically speaking, everybody, caramelize these. When I add my onion to this already, I'm going to turn the heat down on my pan. So we're going to go from a medium-high heat now to a low heat, because we want the onions to get translucent to release their natural sweet flavor. Then we're going to add in 1 clove of garlic. Now, my garlic, I always want to make sure that I run it through a garlic press. And if I can't do that, the next best thing for me to do is to just mince it up really, really small. 3/4 cup of sugar. Once the sugar goes in, I'm constantly just stirring this around and mixing it. You're going to be tasting this just to make sure everything tastes exactly what we're looking for. And the salt and pepper always to finish off something so incredible. This is so insanely good.
on a burger. I think you're really, really going to love it. It's super easy to make, and you could store it away and just reheating it by putting it back in the microwave for 30 seconds. I'm Albert J. Hernandez. You can call me the Untamed Chef for Agnet West.
This is Farm City News Day by Agnet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to Agnet West Farm City News Day. I'm Danielle Leal. In today's Almond Matters, brought to you by Valent, Brian German talks with Tino Lopez from Valent about the current almond season. Hull split is right around the corner, and growers are making the necessary preparations to keep their orchards healthy as they move through this point in the season.
Tino Lopez with Valent. I'm a field market development research representative and conduct mostly field research for Valent in the Central Valley of California.
And it's the middle of June now, and looks like some warm temperatures are coming and predicted to stay this time. So I wanted to check in with you and see where we are in the growing season and how things look in the orchards.
Well, the onset of hull split is coming very quickly. And from there, we're basically finishing our crop, if you will. A lot of effort has gone into it so far to grow it and make sure we have a good crop. So now it's not the time to let up for most growers. They have to make sure that their irrigation is on time, their nutrition is on time, and their pest control is on time. And it all kind of comes together at this time of year because there's a confluency of pest pressure. As irrigation increases, the potential for diseases like hull rot, as well as, you know, just the extra demand on evapotranspiration, making sure that we're putting enough water to keep our crop and our trees healthy and growing.
And you were telling me that the changes in irrigation technology have made it possible to be much more precise and focused, which can help out quite a bit.
Most definitely, the improvements in irrigation, not only in the efficiency, but just in the fact that growers are able to do more precision irrigation, if you will, helps in controlling especially some of the diseases, while at the same time keeping just the trees and the crop at optimum production levels. So drip irrigation, micro sprinkler irrigation, which are the common today, are a far big improvement over, you know, some of the flood irrigation systems that we used in the past. It just gives the growers much better control of their, of their production.
And now with those warm temperatures on the way, that's going to affect pest pressures.
Yes, mites in particular. This week we're forecasting triple digit temperatures the entire week. And that, you know, will, if we haven't had mite problems to date in the orchards, it's more than likely going to kick them off. And we've had a relatively cool growing season so far. Mites have been very few. I've been looking at a lot of orchards, especially where we have our research trials, and we haven't had any kind of mite populations that we can tell building up. But again, that weather pattern is changing. I think that's going to change as well. And people, you know, have to really be on top of it to make sure that the mites do not get past threshold before we start taking care of them.
So what can growers do to get in front of any issues that might be related to either insects or disease or pathogens?
Well, they always have to look downfield, if you will, down the road, because as we start to build populations, we want to make sure that we spray insecticides, miticides to control the mites. But at the same time, we want to be cognizant that we don't exacerbate the problems which are coming also, like navel orange worm. Once we get to hull split, navel orange worm becomes a real challenge, and we have to be on top of that using, softer materials on mites early on to make sure that we have the beneficial insects preserved as much as possible. That'll keep our navel orange worm, pressures under control longer, and then we can come in with navel orange worm programs when necessary. But we don't want to exacerbate it. We don't want to aggravate it any more by using the wrong products And there's good miticides out there. You know, Zeal is one of the products that we have that is very soft on beneficials. It's a longer residual product. It may carry you to the next mite spray that can be oftentimes tank mixed with your navel orangeworm sprays. Along with mites and navel orangeworm is, you know, hull rot that we also need to be cognizant as soon as we start getting into hull split. And that's coming up. I mean, if some orchards have already started, but generally in another few days to a couple of weeks, we will be in right in the middle of hull split. And you have the potential also for hull rot disease to take off at that time. So growers need to be on top of that with their PCAs, make sure that, you know, they can get it under control. It's a very difficult disease to control. At best, we can do a good management job of keeping it suppressed. There's a lot of fungicides, but none of them are 100%. But if you stay on top of it, you can manage it and keep it, you know, to where the damage that they would cause is minimal. There's products that can be used like quash or others and in combination as well to, you know, just make sure that it doesn't get out of control. And it's important because there's nothing that really can cure it once you get started. And these are the major topics in terms of pest management, disease, insects, mites. But, you know, again, irrigation and nutrition are important. There's certain, you know, recommendations that PCAs and the university has. And again, you put a lot of work into growing your crop. We got to finish it strong to make sure that when harvest comes, the crop is there and it's in good quality.
Again, that was Brian German talking with Tino Lopez of Valent. And check back next week for another update of our Almond Matters. This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
In today's CalAg Jobs Employment Minute, find California agricultural employment opportunities online at calagjobs.com. CalAg Jobs is recruiting an irrigation and plant health specialist in the Central Valley. Duties include overseeing all aspects of irrigation system selection, installation, maintenance, operation, and utilization to ensure optimal performance in the delivery of water and nutrients to the fields and plants, resulting in optimal plant health from planting to harvest, delivering yields that meet or exceed expectations. The Wonderful Nurseries is seeking a tree sales representative. The tree sales representative is responsible for maintaining the current customer base as well as increasing and expanding sales within the territory. The territory is California, focusing on the San Joaquin Valley, but will include any other growing areas where they grow trees for nut production, including Arizona. Crop Production Services has an immediate opening for an experienced administrative manager in Santa Maria. With high earning potential, full benefits, and a 401k plan that's second to none, experienced candidates should not pass on this opportunity. The manager would provide administrative support to the general manager, marketing manager, branch managers, and branch staff, as well as aid with budget administration and preparation. CalAg Jobs also offers internship listings completely free of charge. For a full list of services offered by CalAg Jobs or to apply for one of their many opportunities, you can visit calagjobs.com.
The Food and Drug Administration is seeking public comment on fake meat or food produced using animal cell culture technology. The FDA will hold a public meeting next month to gather comments. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association says the organization will participate in the public meeting and will advocate for the Department of Agriculture oversight of lab-grown fake meat products. NCBA claims that the FDA announcement disregards the authorities granted to USDA under the Federal Meat Inspection Act, as well as USDA's significant scientific expertise and longstanding success in ensuring the safety of all meat and poultry products. Under the current regulatory framework, NCBA says the FDA plays an important role in terms of ensuring the safety of food additives used in meat, poultry, and egg products. All additives are initially evaluated for safety by the FDA, but ultimately, USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Services maintains primary jurisdiction. The meeting is planned for July 12th, with a comment period open through September.
A lot of people assume drone companies are making a ton of money, but that isn't necessarily true. Scholar Farms' Greg Krutzinger said the actual drone market has been pretty tough.
Yeah, there's been a pretty bloody couple of years in the hardware space, especially from competition from Chinese drone manufacturers, particularly DJI, which is now around 70% or so of the hardware market. So a lot of companies now are focused on the data side. So how do you take drone data? So less so on like the drone, it's just a flying robot. It's really about the imagery or the sensors and how you collect that data. And
reading that data is the key. Krutzinger said growers are using drones for two main economic reasons. One is easy and can save you money. The other is a little bit more difficult, but could potentially make you more money.
The two things is drones can maybe help reduce costs, and that's, hey, you know, can I pick up variability and can that save me money on my soil sampling, on my tissue sampling, on my management of labor? The most expensive, those are direct. Here's the image. Here's how it relates to a dollar in my pocket or out of my pocket. The management for yield is more complicated because you need to collect the imagery. You need to interpret it into some sort of management decision. Then you need to wait till the end of the year to see if that actually worked out into a yield benefit and was cost effective for how much you had to pay someone to fly your field or get the imagery itself.
I'm Taylor Hillman for Agnet West Radio Network.
And now for a recap of one of today's top stories.
The Bureau of Reclamation recently issued updated allocations for the South of Delta Central Valley Project contractors for the 2018 contract year. The updated allocations are based on continued refinement of hydrologic and operational analysis, along with evolving operational conditions. The allocation for South of Delta Agricultural Water Service contractors has now been increased from 45 to 50%. The updated allocations for contractors South of Delta remains at the greater of 75% of their historic use or public health and safety needs. To promote effective use of supplies and efficiency for next year's operations, the Bureau of Reclamation still plans to limit the overall amount of water in San Luis Reservoir that is rescheduled at the end of the contract year into the 2019 contract year. Discussions will continue with South of Delta contractors and others to refine end-of-year rescheduling concepts and implementation. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow Agnet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgnetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgnetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgnetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West.